There is an endless sea of podcasts about entrepreneurship. Talking about it, but not living it. We live it every day. This is Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel, talking about real estate investing, but also encompassing general subjects in regards to owning small to medium-sized businesses, and of course, all the struggles that business owners must overcome to be successful. This is Inside the Wolf's Den, and this is Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel.
Welcome back to Inside the Wolf's Den with your hosts, Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. Today, we actually have a special guest in the house, Jordan Welda. How are you, Jordan?
I'm doing good. Glad to be here.
Well, thanks for coming to Inside the Wolf's Den, not virtual today. So it's pretty awesome. Yeah,
we appreciate that.
Yeah. So. Super stoked to be here. I love what you guys are doing.
Thank you.
Thanks. So just a little bit about Jordan. Jordan got his startup in the property management industry in 2007 by working for an HOA company called Real Manage. In 2008, Jordan jumped from HOA management to single family homes when he started Manage My Property. It was a business that allowed him to deliver 100,000 leads to thousands of property management companies. Three clear patterns were evident to Jordan while running Manage My Properties. Number one, client sales process was driven by a combination of gut instinct and current availability. Number two, most property management don't track their close rates. And three, his clients tended to fall in the middle of the market. This led to Lead Simple being born in 2012. Jordan shortly followed up with also launching his first property management sales course. In 2016, Jordan casually mentioned to a colleague and friend about starting a property management conference, which led to PM Growth Summit, which is now a premier event for property managers and sales organization. Jordan wasn't done there. After being a part of a series of popular interviews, he knew he needed to give more value to his audience and followers. So he started a popular podcast, the Profitable Property Management Podcast. In 2018, Jordan launched a sister company, Profit Coach, which provided the first financial benchmark for the industry. This led to being asked by NARPM to develop the National Accounting Standards for Residential Property Managers. Wow, Jordan, quite the entrepreneur here,
take a,
right?
Take a deep breath there. Yeah, after
that one. I love that you took the time to read that off. I want everybody that interviews me in the future to know I demand at least a 30-second introduction of that level of detail or else it won't come on. So not really, but hey, thanks for reading that. That was amazing to hear my accolades like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, so now that we learned the history about you, I want to know, like, were you always an entrepreneur?
You know, I guess so. As a kid, like, it's always what I wanted to do. It was always in my mind's eye.
Wow.
I was just impressed that I didn't realize you contributed that much to the property management space. Like, I don't know what made you focus on being that space, the residential property management.
How'd I get into it? Yeah. I mean, there's always the question of, like, was it tactical or was it strategic? Yeah. It felt like it was a little bit more opportunistic in the sense that I just kind of fell into it and I just did one thing and it mushroomed into another. And it was always for me, how do I add the most value, which forces you to do things like going from lead gen. I mean, that was the first jump was, right, I'm sending all these leads and people are struggling to close in the lead. So it's like, well, could we help them close? Yeah, we could do the CRM thing. And then realized you can grow a business and not make any money, which is kind of depressing, but true. So that got me into thinking about more of the profit kind of stuff. So I'm just like chasing impact, really. And that was what segued to starting these different businesses.
That's cool. Is there one that you had, like, more, you took more to that, or you loved doing or was more passionate about?
I tend to work in 2 to 3 year cycles. So I can get really up to something for like 2 to 3 years.
And then you move
on. That's an entrepreneur.
Yeah. Once I feel like I've done it, I'm like, all right, what's the next thing?
What's next? You know? What's next?
Yeah, exactly. I got to take my jacket off for this one, guys. You're really bringing it here.
So what, give us your background, like growing up, where'd you grow up? Like, I know she gave you a lot of your career, what you accomplished in your career, but what, before that, like, tell us what led to you becoming who you are today.
Wow, that's a lot. I think the thing that most sticks out in my mind is My parents got divorced when I was a little kid. My mom remarried, and the guy that she remarried was an entrepreneur, or what I understood to be an entrepreneur. Mm. My stepdad is in finance. He's a wealth advisor. And even though now looking at that, I'd say, okay, you know what? That's somebody that owns a book of business. Mm-hmm. It's more like a salesperson. Mm-hmm. At the time, in my mind, that was a business owner. And that really gave me permission. It put entrepreneurship on the menu of life options. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I chose it, which is really profound to me just to realize that for a lot of folks, it's not on the menu. For me, it was. And so I chose it. And so that was a huge part of it for me.
That's cool.
Very cool.
Yeah. It's similar to my background. I guess my mom... OBGYN, but owned her own practice, mm-hmm. you know, and my dad owned a small, really small custom cabinetry business. But to me, that exposed me to, I guess, just being in business for yourself, even though I feel like a doctor, that you know, they're very dictated by the amount of hours they can work. But it got us into the entrepreneur space. And I think it just, we took it to a whole nother level, mm-hmm. but I think it opened, like you're saying, opened that door, opened your eyes to, or permission, like you're saying, to get into that space. So
very cool. So what's been your biggest struggle as an entrepreneur?
My biggest struggle has probably just been dealing with myself. The things that make me great also mm-hmm. can be my downfall. That compulsiveness that gives you the will to do new things that you don't know how to do and to work really hard, it can also leave you spinning and leave you unfulfilled. So I think just managing my own mindset, my own thoughts, my relationship with my work has probably been the biggest kind of recurring challenge.
Yeah.
That's tough. Yeah. I mean, to jump in from it probably drives your wife crazy.
You know, I feel like she knew what she was getting into. Yeah. So it wasn't a surprise, but.
I mean, I don't drive you crazy, do I, Sean?
Well, I probably drive, in the beginning, I probably drove you crazy.
Probably.
New things. And now it's kind of morphed into where she will want to try new things. I'm like, no, no, slow down.
Yeah. But you guys are on the same page. You both have the disease, right?
Correct.
So. Yes.
It's a good way to categorize it.
So it can be a lot. You know, just like paying attention and being present as opposed to being distracted with the future can be challenging.
Yeah. I mean, have you worked on that? Because we have. Like, where you really have to... especially me, like working on being present.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been
tell us how you do that, because you have two children now, right?
Three.
So what are their ages?
6, 4, and 18 months. So I'm in it. Yeah. I'm definitely in it. And they're old enough now where I can tell when they are aware of my distraction.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a trip, you know.
So is that why your phone is so small? So you can try to hide it?
That's part of it, yeah. I get a lot of folks that give me grief about it. But, yeah, I use that when I travel. But I have a proper, straight-up dumb phone at home. And so it doesn't do anything other than make phone calls.
Yeah.
So it does help. It's a little bit of what helps. I think also managing my own expectations for myself and my goals and what I'm trying to get done.
Mm-hmm.
It's just easy to have endless ambition and to be so ungrateful as an entrepreneur. Like you set a goal, you hit it, and it's like, whatever. What's next?
What's next?
There's no like just like sit here and just be grateful that I got the opportunity to set a goal and to hit it. So I think for me, gratitude is a big part of the antidote. When I'm grateful, I'm more content, and it's easier for me to just be happy and celebrate what I've done instead of focusing on what is yet to be.
And you can be in the present. Yeah, it's an awesome. Yeah, I love that. But going back to the struggle, like, because we try to be, our listeners, we'd really try to share, like, the struggles or what, you know, especially as entrepreneurs, either people maybe thinking about getting into the space or people that are entrepreneurs that are struggling that, hey, they're not alone, they're not unique to them.
Mm-hmm.
Share some, as you built some of these incredible businesses and stuff, what struggles did you go through? And anything that sticks out, that, other than maybe, you bounce around or... that you'd be open to sharing?
I think at the outset, one of the biggest challenges is that you know you're playing house. Like, it's not really real. It's as real as you believe. If you stop, the whole thing collapses. Early on, there's not a bunch of employees. There's no office. You're at home. I remember working at a Starbucks at, 2 in the morning that had shut down at, 11, and I was using their electricity, typing on my computer.
Wow.
I was typing a guide to hiring a property manager, of all things. And, Yeah. And like, that's just like a moment where, you know, I could just go home and nobody would care. Nobody's going to shame me. Like, it's all made up. So the belief early on, I guess all the way throughout, but just, it's all made up, you know, like you're the one that has to believe and lean in. And it's really hard early on. So that's why it's really important who you surround yourself with. Yeah. Are you surrounded by people that believe in you and are pursuing the same things, or people where there's just like this constant inertia? In general, I find that environment overwhelms intention.
Yes.
So I'm all about getting like the best, most optimized environment possible.
Well, were you married at that time, or were
no, I was single.
You're single. I mean, because people, a lot of people ask about us, and the big thing is that we leaned on each other a lot. And so, because we've been together since we were 15, so we started our business together. We, in the beginning, she is maybe like, what are we doing? Like, what are you getting us into? But I think as we grew it, we really relied on each other, and we didn't need anybody out there to give us approval, or we believed in each other, and that's what carried us. So it's hard, you know, when we're coaching or just offering advice to other couples, like, you know, especially if they're not on the same page, because that's like we were, and it's hard to.
And we were also young and maybe a little naive too. You know, like we didn't know what we didn't know.
You got to be naive. Right? If you knew, you wouldn't have done it, at least in my case.
We just dive in and, hey, failed and fell on our face a bunch of times, which I'm sure you have.
Totally.
You know, but it's part of it.
Yeah, it's part of learning. I mean, in the beginning, like you said, there were massive roller coasters. But I mean, because we were in the flipping business at that time. So, you know, you flip a house and you make a bunch of money. Well, your next closing is probably not for another 4 months, you know, because you had to buy another house, rehab it and all that. So it would take months for you to get. So you either had to really save, or because if you blew it right away, you're going to be living off, you know, ramen,
ramen noodles.
Or at Starbucks at 2 a.m. using power. Yeah.
So how do you stay focused with all that you have going on? Like, do you.
And the little ones and everything. Yeah. It's a lot.
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm figuring it out too, guys. So I'm not here sitting with all the answers. But I would say that when I get really clear on my vision, my why, the things that give me the most joy, kind of my personal code, are if I'm focused on a professional activity that allows me to engage in creative expression, personal transformation, and relational connection, those are three things that I've identified really light me up and allow me to show up at my best.
Nice.
So filtering for what's going to get me in that place and what are the things that I just feel guilted and obligated into doing. I think that if you go past that initial starting point and you scale up a bit, I've observed that the title of CEO comes with being a founder, and it's pretty happenstance.
Yeah.
A lot of founders are not either great at or don't want to be CEO, but it comes with it.
Right.
I think in my case, there's a lot of things that I feel obligated to do that are not necessarily my unique talent and ability. So like in that middle stage, getting over the guilt trip of not making yourself do things that you don't want to do and realizing you can delegate and you're not a loser because you're not great at accounting and sales and blah, blah, blah. Like, you're going to be good at some things.
Yeah.
Marketing is the hard skill that I most relate to and I lean towards. I'm terrible at accounting. That is not my jam. I can flex up and do it, but I don't enjoy it. So if I'm spending a lot of time doing that, it's at the expense of what really matters in the business.
Yeah. So it makes a lot of sense.
Your recommendation is just if they're smaller, you got to power through it, right? I mean, there's no choice. And then as you grow, I had trouble delegating some of that stuff. Did you ever experience that, or did you feel like,
What is the, the division of skills between you two? What's the natural offset?
So I'm more like the accounting, financial.
Mine's all about relationships. Yeah. Out there building relationships. Nice. That's what I like to do. I don't like to be in the office. I have to at times, but I don't like to be it.
So you probably were okay delegating relationships to her, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Yeah, so like in the beginning, like if we had to talk about making phone calls or like doing all that, I was like, Joni, here, you got to call this person. You know, it's like, and then she would do it and have those difficult conversations. And I would just be behind the scenes. But it worked.
So that's the irony, is that we don't struggle to delegate things that we're really terrible at. We struggle to delegate the things that we're really good at.
Yeah.
So we're okay at delegation. We struggle to delegate the things that we have really strong opinions about. And I've had to work through that too, I think communicating my vision and not making it feel dictatorial, like marketing as an example. You know, we're doing the podcast, the lighting's a certain way, you know, intro, outro. Like, I can get kind of anal about that stuff. But it's like the vision, first principles thinking, that's made it easier for me to get better at articulating myself in a way that is transferable. I've heard Jeremy say a million times, the strength of the owner is oftentimes the weakness of the business. So like when I'm doing sales, it is so different than my team. I'm cheating. I'm like, what's up? I'm the CEO. You know me. You saw me. You see me on television. You want to do business. My team can't do that, you know?
So, I have an 84% conversion ratio. What's yours?
Exactly. So getting to the point where I can translate what's happening in a way that's accessible to other people, that has definitely helped with delegation. But I think the biggest thing for me is just going for the next thing. Like, you guys have started multiple business units.
Right.
The fantasy for me has always been, I'm going to get everything over here nice and tidy and fully organized, and then I'm going to earn or give myself permission to do the next thing. My style is more like, just start the next thing. There's going to be some fires. Some of these people are going to be unhappy. Why are you over here doing this thing? But if the next thing is a big enough opportunity and it really lights me up enough, it creates enough and momentum and inertia to justify itself, and then I get kind of buy-in. So I'm wondering if you're enjoying this philosophy. This may not be your style.
No, we've done that a lot, and we tend to jump in. Looking back, I'm like, because there's like, I'll give you an example, like Mr. Reuter starting that. Knowing now what I all know, you know, it's everything. Looking back, it's like if I have full trans, you know, I can see everything 2020. I would not do it again. Like that would be a total mistake. I just drove right. And then even with the building, when we went from buying homes for remodel to new construction, I just dove right in, bought a bunch of lots.
Sometimes you have to, though. You're going to make mistakes, but you'll figure it out, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it I think it exhausts your team at times. I think
that's true.
It puts strain on your relationship if you're if your wife's involved or not involved, because she has to hear
either
or
way
deal with, or deal with the financial problems that you just, you know, created. So I mean, I think it's tough on people around you, and yeah, it excites you, and it, but I think you can be a little bit more strategic about it.
Yeah, no doubt. It's a balance for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, we're human beings. There's a certain level of motivation required to get me out of bed, and I can't ignore that for the sake of what's in a spreadsheet. You know, I have to be motivated to come here and to keep showing up at my best. And I think that's part of the irrational nature of being an entrepreneur. It's like you work so hard to get it working, and then once it's working, you go break it. Why? Who does that?
We do. Clearly.
Yeah. But it is hard to explain to other people.
Yeah. Is there anything going back and looking at, you know, now that you can go back and see, would you have done anything different?
Yeah, definitely. One thing that comes to mind would be, there was a period of time where I had one business and I knew I wanted to do something new, but I felt so committed to this first business that I got emotional. I was like, I'd be abandoning it by moving on. Yeah. So I tried to contort it by getting that entity to have ownership in a new thing, as opposed to just keeping it fully separated and clean. So like dragging people along for my adventures has not been a great idea. Instead, I've had to separate my identity from the business. The business has some needs, and I've seen a handful of businesses that have kind of been destroyed by the owner not making that distinction. Maybe the business wants to get $3 million and stay there.
Yeah.
And just kind of hang out and be profitable. But instead, it's got to fulfill the fantasies and the expectations of the entrepreneur, and so it gets contorted and mangled, as opposed to like, you know what, start a new LLC, do your new stuff elsewhere, pull some capital out, make an investment. So that's one thing that I would have done more earlier, is just detaching my personal kind of ego from what the business needed.
Wow. Yeah. We've gone through that. So we've never exited a company yet, and we've never, I want to say this without sounding bad, but like we've never failed at a company yet. Hopefully I don't open up the door to that. So good. But it's hard, because somebody told me the other day, it's like, well, if Reuter's, and it's now at a place that it's running really well. We got a great operations manager. I spend very little time at all in that company, and it's growing and it's healthy. But it's somebody who told me the other day, well, why don't you just sell it? Like, I'm not ready to. I haven't hit that 3 million or I haven't hit, there's a goal in there that I want. We haven't hit that sales revenue. If we hit that, maybe, yeah. I'll mm-hmm. But I can't detach myself. I'm having trouble detaching myself from the business now when I haven't hit my goals of where I mm-hmm. wanted for it. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever... So maybe you're telling me to take my separate myself from it, or
you know. I mean, so letting go has been interesting.
Yeah,
yeah. So I started PM Grow and I transitioned out of that 4.5. Took it over. That was an event. That didn't feel like a business. It was an event thing, but it was one instance of having some transition. And then RentScale, the sales consulting business, that I actually did have a proper exit out of. Mm-hmm. And there's definitely some mental transition of like, man, I built this thing and, you know, you see people out there and you want to be involved. But it's also been really healthy for me to let go and to just realize that that's like the natural evolution of things. And it Absolutely. Creates space and margin to do the next mm-hmm. thing. That's what was getting crazy is I was flying. I had 1 week where I flew from Austin to Portland to Denver to Boca Raton, back to Austin, wow. just for like team quarterlies. And I realized I needed to do that 4 times a year. And I was like, it's too much.
Yeah.
Too much.
Yeah. That's good. I'm sure it gets easier, especially if you do this first one. I'm sure if you start something else, then I'm sure it'd be easy to, you've already detached yourself from one business. I'm sure it's like getting a tattoo. You know, once you get one, you can probably get another one. I don't know. I've never got a tattoo, so I wouldn't know if that's the case or not. But
well, let's switch gears. I want to talk about a little bit about Lead Simple, sure. what you have going on there.
Yeah,
talk about, you know, the CRM, Lead Simple. Mm. Some of our listeners, I mean, obviously they're property management companies. They may not know you. Mm-hmm. So let's get into that a little bit.
Yeah, that is my 9-to-5 right now. So I'm spending all my time focused on Lead Simple. And the kind of the story there was we built out this CRM platform and probably over like 4 years, we kind of came up and became mm-hmm. kind of the de facto standard for a lot of property managers. And then it started to plateau. And what got really clear was that we were going to need to rebuild it if we wanted to go from CRM to managing operational concerns. Mm-hmm. And we did. So that took about 2 years. And then we soft launched it about 18 months ago. Mm-hmm. And it's gone really, really well. So we've gone from a sales and marketing focused CRM, purpose built for property managers, mm-hmm. to now focusing on the totality of property management operations. So everything from a move in, move out, renewals, all of that kind of turn cycle, all of that stuff can now be managed through basically workflow automation, checklist features. We're now rolling out an inbox, a shared inbox functionality, kind of similar to Help Scout. Mm-hmm. All of that stuff can be done inside of Lead Simple. And we're just really focused on property management world, you know, those specific use cases.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I have a lot of franchises that I know of real property management that's using this. So
yeah, absolutely.
Working out really great for them. Say a lot of awesome things about it. We also use Lead Simple. Yeah. So
I think it's a huge need because outside mm-hmm. of the bigger property management technologies like that manage, they need that, those automations, the CRM, mm-hmm. the checklist,
and all in one location too,
correct.
Right? Which is the biggest thing. I mean,
that's the idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
For a lot of entrepreneurs, they're not able to get an alternative answer when they ask somebody a question like, did you do XYZ? Mm-hmm. Or how did this go?
Right.
Like, you hope you get a good answer, but if you don't get a good answer, most folks can't really audit what actually was or was not done. The goal is to have a place where it's like a canonical place to look about objectively what actually happened.
Yeah. So what's next for your, can you give us some insight? What's coming down the road for you guys?
Yeah, for Lead Simple, I'd say the focus right now really is pivoting into this shared inbox technology. So do you guys use like any centralized
help scout
emails like leasing at?
Yeah, it's a support at.
Support at, okay. So it's the same thing. So all of those emails coming into the same place. There's
right.
one common view. Somebody mm-hmm. leaves, they step out, somebody else can answer yes, the emails.
Yes.
All of that tech is what we're adding right now. So that's in beta right now. We're currently kicking it around, and we feel like that's probably going to round out as much surface area as we're trying to take in the near term, and then just go deeper within the context of workflow, shared inbox, and CRM.
What about communication inside, like as far as like chatting?
Chat comes with that. So the first iteration doesn't have that, but that's definitely going to get pulled out of us. Mm-hmm. So we're anticipating that. I assume you guys are using something like that right now?
Teams, yeah.
Okay.
So everything's built through Teams right now. But see, we're working through so many different
platforms.
It's like you open your browser and it's like
just explodes.
Yeah. So But I mean, that seems to be the struggle with a lot of I'm glad you guys are building it, but there's not a great solution for it right now.
Communication is the name of the game. It's the whole thing.
Absolutely. So what's next for Jordan?
What's next for Jordan? You know, I'm on this ride and journey, and it's going really well with Lead Simple, so I'm committed and leaning in here for the next couple of years. Beyond that, I'm always just trying to stay on the bleeding edge. As the organization grows, that stretches me. Mm-hmm. So HR challenges, oddly, I find like kind of a new frontier. There's the functional, the literal of HR, like scorecards and reviews and performance metrics, but the soft skills around conversations, helping people level up, seeing that career path growth, that's really rewarding for me. That's so I think as I have like multiple organizations and teams expanding, it gives me more mind share to like fully appreciate what that human development, both in terms of recruiting as well as helping mature people and also helping exit people out of the organization when it no longer makes sense. That's kind of a bleeding edge for me.
That's good. We just had our meeting earlier this morning with we have a fractional HR company.
Great.
And that's been it's been awesome.
Yeah, it's been game changer for us.
And they do a lot of course they do the traditional stuff of HR, but they really work with our group or our leadership team, and then Joni and I, with those soft skills, with those how to have this, and they'll coach. They'll even come in because they're local to Houston, so they'll come in and even sit with us with like an employee review or something, you know, just to kind of coach or help the leader develop, which is awesome. So
HR, I find, is one of those things that most founders aren't thinking is going to take up as much time as it takes up.
And especially into this market that we're in right now, I think recruiting and HR should be like a big percentage, almost a third of your, if you're growing and all, you're going to have to constantly be recruiting. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to find people, but people think that, you know, it's the last thing they do, you know, so it's like only if they have to. So if they got a hole, then all of a sudden you're average, you know, and it's okay, you got to be constantly recruiting, constantly developing. So,
Any current books you're reading that you'd like to share with our audience?
Yeah, let's see. Well, in my top five, I always like to mention Outsiders. It's a book about the top greatest CEOs of all time, as ranked by shareholder returns. So not glitz and glam, but just straight up shareholder returns. And I love that book. Hmm. I had heard of maybe two of the top 10.
Who are, do you know by off the top of your head?
So Warren Buffett would be one. The guy, Warren Sloan, I think his name. Basically, the cable guy that started all of these initial
cable.
It was the first roll-up in cable. So all of these independent cable offices that got rolled up together to one conglomerate to create something like CBS. That would be another. But I was shocked that I had only heard of like two of the 10 greatest CEOs of all time, as defined by shareholder returns.
Wow. Let's check that book out.
Some other stuff that I'm reading, I'm actually looking up on my phone. I'm an Audible guy. I do a lot of audio that way. I am loving Mr. Schmooze. That was recommended to me by Adam Krauss from Atrium down in Florida. Executive Toughness was just recommended to me. I'm about to start that. Sam Walton's biography was awesome. I don't know if you guys have read that.
No.
The Walmart founder. It was great. And Play Bigger, I'm reading religiously. I'm in like my third read. That came from Andrew Smallwood from Second Nature. And then High Up Management by Andy Grove was really, really good. So those are some ones that come to mind for me.
We have a lot of entrepreneurs that are just starting out or young, or they don't have to be young, but the people that are just looking into it, like what advice, being that now that you've had all this experience, startups, exited some, what advice would you give them to start up?
My advice,
we kind of talked about this in the hallway just a minute ago.
I've said this a million times, but I really don't believe that entrepreneurship is a great way to make money from a probabilistic sort of way. I think there are better, more efficient ways to make money if money is your only objective. It's a great way to have a crazy, rich human experience in hardship and struggle and autonomy. But if your sole goal is to make money, I think there are better hustles, you know, working for a blue chip company, working for a technology company that's on the upswing, accruing some shares. I mean, honestly, jumping around from one employer to another in 18 to 24 month stints. To me, that's a more rational way. So if you're thinking about entrepreneurship, the best thing to do is to get clear, do you really want to be an entrepreneur? That's step one. Is this a good idea for me? And if it doesn't, if it's a means to an end, like I'm going to do this and I'm not going to love it, but eventually I'll be able to get over here and like retire and have this. I don't think that's great. If it's just like the thing that you want to do as your long-term grind, it's going to take way longer and be way harder and probably make you way less money than you think, but still be good in the end, then shoot, roll with it.
I agree with you 100%. So do you feel that entrepreneurs are born, or do you feel they can be created?
I think that entrepreneurial thinking can be taught. Yes. But the aspect of entrepreneurship that is inbred is the desire, is the irrational desire to embrace suffering. I don't know how you teach that. You know,
I love that.
I don't know if you can, because we always often question ourselves, like, why do we just keep taking hits and keep taking hits?
Because we're crazy.
And keep taking hits. And then we get up in the morning, like, we act like nothing happened, and we're like, go to the office.
Because you enjoy it. Yeah. I mean, that's it. Because we enjoy it. It's satisfying.
Our knees are all bleeding and everything, but we're just keeping up. Like, oh, this is normal. Why does everybody else do this?
Yeah. So, if that doesn't sound enjoyable, why would you do entrepreneurship? Yeah. I don't know why.
What is your biggest, what's been your biggest reward then as being an entrepreneur? So there's got to be a positive, right? Every valley, there's a peak.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, the autonomy, I reflect back on getting to kind of the floor of passive income. I eclipsed this floor of passive income, not like nothing crazy, but enough to be able to live autonomously without working. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even think about it. It was like years later, I reflected back. It wasn't some hugely meaningful thing of like, now I don't have to work anymore. It was like, wow, now I get to work harder because I have more capital to throw around. I think being able to be in a position where you can express yourself creatively and to build something, to have a dream, a vision, an idea, and to bring it to reality is intensely gratifying, especially when there's the threat of failure. Like, I'm not a trust fund kid. If I don't figure this out, something bad happens to me financially. I have a family, I have people to provide for. So that pressure to me is just a really clarifying thing. Like, it really gets me going.
That's cool. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, Jordan, any last minute words for our guests?
Yeah, my last minute words would be keep listening to this show. Keep reading, keep trying. I love what you guys are doing.
There's so much free content out there, right? Like, that's one thing. Just dig into it.
Yeah, totally. You guys are doing really interesting things. I think for those in property management land in particular, the play of what you guys are doing is really interesting to me. Using property management as kind of a hub and spoke model, you're at the center of a bunch of relationships and connections and being able to monetize in a bunch of different ways. That's it. Like, that's what I've done. I accrued a lot of reach in the market, and then I started different things to be able to fully monetize and justify the depth of relationship that I wanted to have for my customer. I love what you guys are doing. So I think in many ways that's a model for people specifically in property management to ask of, like, how can I add more value to my customers and monetize along the way?
Yeah. Well, thank you, Jordan, and thanks for joining us inside the Wolf's Den.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
We appreciate it. Thank you. If you like this, please share it. If you why don't you share how they can get a hold of you before we exit?
Yeah, you can email me at jordan@leadsimple.com.
Are you on any social?
I am. I'm on Facebook. It's probably the primary one I'm on.
Primary. Cool. So if you want to reach out, if you want to learn more about LeadSimple, please email him. We'll put this in the show notes, but thanks again for coming.
Thanks for having me, guys.
See ya.
It's a blast.
You've been listening to Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkle. Tons of entrepreneurial podcasts are out there talking.
Talk, talk, talking.
But Joni and Sean are living it every single day. Their portfolio now includes many franchises and medium-sized businesses. We talk about the trials and motivators of successfully running a business. Join us again soon for another podcast. But until then, reach out on the website at InsideTheWolf'sDen.com, on Facebook at Inside the Wolf's Den, on Instagram at Inside the Wolf Den. We'll see you again soon. This is Inside the Wolf's Den. We'll see you next time.